Hello and welcome to recording number 28 of Gary Gygax's Saga of Old City, an annotated reading. Today is July 7th, 2021. I'm going to restart here on page number 213, just opposite the Clyde Caldwell illustration of Gord fighting the Hillmen. It is paragraph number one. Paragraph number 7. Dogs barked frantically as they entered the place, and several lights were visible behind shuttered windows. Someone shouted out, demanding to know who trespassed in the community, and Gord replied simply that friendly and tired travelers sought refuge from the night. The only reply was a slamming noise, indicating that the inquirer had shut and probably barred fast the shutter he had opened to ask. All around them, the lights inside the huts were doused. "At least we aren't being attacked this time," Evely observed ruefully. Gord shrugged to himself in the dark and moved his gelding ahead, peering at the dark shapes around them. Evely followed, and they advanced to the far edge of the hamlet without further incident. Here they came upon a small farmhouse and barn that were somewhat isolated from the other buildings. Gord dismounted in front of the barn door and used his dagger blade to carve through the simple lock. Holding it closed, Gord and Evely led their horses inside. Gord barred the door with his sword blade, and soon both weary wayfarers were asleep in the straw therein. Break. So we get a description here of Owlthorpe as a hamlet, and with huts, that's the town that they've come to after going by the, defeating the Hillman chief and moving, further up that rough track. I had the idea possibly that Owlthorpe was bigger. But as a hamlet, it should be a pretty small, pretty small community there. All right, it's a little surprising here. Gord shows also that the use of that dagger, especially against wood, where he's able to carve right through the barn and cut the lock right out from the barn door. All right, I'm going to restart right here. It is page 214 and paragraph 2. Pounding on the secure door awakened them a few hours later in the early morning. An outraged owner demanded to know who was in his barn. Gord and Evely roused themselves, brushed off a few bits of clinging straw, and greeted the fellow cordially. After a few bronzes clinked into his hand, the man was civil, although by no means friendly or informative. That required a few more coins. Eventually they learned where they were, how far away the next community was, and how to get there. After paying yet more for a meal, the two left Owlsthorpe and rode east through the remainder of the Flinty Hills toward Nurl and Count Blamoo's castle there. They saw a few gnomes fleetingly, and met no threat during their passage through the region. The land became a series of green rolling hills then, and travel was swifter. In 2 days, they came to the ferry across the upper reaches of the Harp River. They crossed the river just as the sun was setting, and Evely told Gord that they were now only half a day's ride from her own. That night they spent in a hostel near the crossing, making love desperately. Gord wasn't certain why, but for some reason a deep melancholy had settled over Evely during the last 2 or 3 days. She had refused to elaborate on her mood on the few occasions when Gord chanced to bring it up, sometimes passing it off as a fleeting thing, and at other times simply ignoring or pretending not to hear his questions. Break. Well, we have this change in Evely's character, which, goes toward the story and, you know, particularly the story rather than anything really with the lore. But we also have another comment on the coins, and I always love talking about the coinage. And here, a few bronzes, you know, gets the man Civil, whose barn, that door they carved open. And then a few more coins of undetermined value to get them a meal and get some information. That goes back again. The Bronze Z is a particularly low-value coin. I mean, it goes iron drab Bronze Z. It is surprising here the way the currency goes. It shouldn't be too surprising that here out in the wilds of the Flinty Hills that, you know, the coinage buys more. But at the same time, it's been a while since Gord has not been throwing around silver nobles and electrum rather readily. We get some geographical information about, you know, on their way to Nurl, that's eastward from here, and that they reach a ferry of the Harp River. So I'm not sure if that location is noted. I bet it is. So, you know, we can see here that east of Owlsthorpe, 2 days from Owlsthorpe, I believe, then that we come across a ford. And then from there, it's pretty close to Count Blumu's castle in Nurl. All right, and there we have a little picture. We have Nurl sitting on the river, the Harp River. Don't see a ford that is noted on this particular map, or where the end of that rough trail would be, unless they've gotten this town of Glandeven, where I believe where Owlsthorpe should actually be.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, it does seem to me that maybe just shift the two names. If you put Glandeven where Owlsthorpe is, and unless it's got to be noted somewhere, and I assume it's in either the second edition stuff or in the Living Greyhawk, the LGG, or the campaign material that came afterwards.
The map that I'm looking at, the same one that I posted, but I can see it. It's a little bit bigger. The trail that comes out of Glandeven crosses the Harp with a bridge.
So yes, now I see that. There's a little bridge. Yeah. Bridge there, north, kind of northwest of Nurl, although they're both on the Harp River.
And way north of that, north of the lake, you'll see a city at the top, all the way up there. That's called Harrodford. So I don't know if that's the ford, or I mean, I'm not just pointing things out.
I would assume that the ford is just the bridge, mm-hmm. the bridge token. And as it's, from the description, I don't think they would be taking that rough trail north all that way, which looks like it's probably only, you know, at most a day's travel upriver, depending on the roughness of the trail. If we look at that bridge and we see where it is, and then we look down toward Nurl, they're saying that's about half a day's travel, then that other city to the north on the Harp River, that should be about a day at most. What I find interesting is that it still looks like a rough trail across the Harp, but going south, it looks more like a regular road that sweeps down and comes across a town and then over to Nurl.
I think the town is Nivlik.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a little trouble making it out, but yeah, it is looks like it is a bigger thing right there.
And there's actually another trail that comes out of the Flinties there too. There's two trails that come out, one by Glandeven and one by Nivlik.
I'm going to check real quick and see if I have... I do have Glandeven listed. I have it in my index as a fortification of some sort. And as listed in WGR4, which is, I believe, the Marklands. So, so Glandeven, which I believe should be Owlthorpe, which is a hamlet, rather than Glandeven as a fortification. And yes, on this map, the road, the trail coming out to Glandeven is even rougher than the dotted trail traveling east of Glandeven. You know, if you make that out. So it looks like it is a very rough trail right there. But I think from locations that Owlsthorpe should be on that trail, and Glandeven, I really think should be, you know, more you could swap with Owlsthorpe. But it looks like Owlsthorpe is in the wrong place. But it may be Owlsthorpe is on the, you know, on Sargent's map. Mm-hmm. All right. The other thing is that we get Gord noticing Evelise's melancholy, which, you know, may be a foretaste of things to come. All right, I am going to restart right here. It is page 214, and it is the second to last paragraph. Gord felt himself beginning to be overcome by the same bleak mood, which was frustrating because he didn't know its cause, and because he had expected both of them to be happy now that they were so close to their goal. Their intimate contact in the hostel on the eve of Evelise's homecoming heightened rather than lessened the mood, and he slept little that night, his brief periods of slumber troubled by evil dreams. Next morning was bright and clear, and much to Gord's surprise and pleasure, Evelise seemed to have thrown off her sadness. Smiling and radiant, she urged him to hurry, and the two raced their mounts along the well-kept highway. At a crossroads hamlet, Thassel Farm, they spurred left, Evelise laughing as stray fowl squawked and flapped as they got out of the path of the thundering horses, and dogs pursued them barking. Soon Gord saw the towers and battlements marking Castle Blamoux. They too were seen, and amidst a sounding of brazen horns, mailed riders came forth to meet them. Evelise shouted her name joyously. The challenging patrol quickly became a guard of honor for the long-lost Lady Evelise's triumphant return. Break. This is page 215 and the end of chapter number 20. We've got a little location here, Thassel Farm, and it seems by the map we're using, a bit odd.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it could be located there.
Yeah, I mean, why would they travel further than Nirl? In fact, if they crossed the Harp River going east, then that Nivlik is on the western side of the Harp rather than the eastern side, and Thassel Farm is across a ford or a bridge south of Nirl.
They would have to go a half day's or a day's ride out of their way to get to Nirl through Thassel Farm.
Yeah, part of a day. I mean, it was supposedly a half day's ride down the river. I'd say that's probably, you know, 4 or 5 hours travel. Say 4 hours travel further south, and they'd have to go right through Nirl or Nivlik right. to reach it. And since they're said to be east of the river, and you know, it doesn't make much sense. Also, if they're traveling south, and going left would be traveling sort of eastward. You know, if they're pointing south, then their left is the east, So Fassel Farm seems to be in a wrong location there.
I wish I knew the sources for the placement of those towns on the map.
Yeah, I'm assuming that it's probably coming from the Marklands.
Okay.
Let me see real quick right here, and I will check my index. No, Fassel Farm is only listed here on page, right here in Saga of Old City.
Okay.
Although I think...
What is that, 214, 215?
Yeah, it is 215.
Yeah.
215, that's Fassel Farm. And I don't have it as part of the Marklands, although I have certainly missed things before. So it's impossible that it is mentioned elsewhere, but I don't see it. Now, there's a lot of listings for Nurl and for Nivlik. I don't seem to have Nivlik listed here. So, I think if Saga of Old City is the only reference, then it's certainly in the wrong location on this map. Now, I found that Owlthorpe, I would say Owlthorpe's in the wrong location. And then it would also be then that Nivlik, that Fassel Farm is in the wrong location. All right, I'm going to restart here. It is page 216, the beginning of chapter 21, first paragraph. A light shone in the distance, growing brighter as it came nearer. Then a loud rasping split the still, dark air, followed by the groaning creak of rusty metal, grating on rusty metal. Torchlight flooded into the cell through the partially open door, and seemed to the prisoner within its radiance as bright as noonday sun. Ford shuffled forward to the full extent of the chain binding his left leg to the hasp set in the granite wall farthest from the door, shielding his eyes from the brightness, but eager to get the scant rations promised by this event. Each day was the same for him, consisting of darkness infested by rodents, insects, and arachnids, broken only by this event, the doling out of a pannikin of water and a bit of food dished into his wooden bowl. This time he received a soupy mixture of vegetable peels and some unidentified stuff. Gord didn't worry about the ingredients at all, accepting the stuff and swallowing it down quickly. A small piece of hard black bread was included in his ration, but this he intended to save for later. The door was slammed shut, and the bolt once again shot home with the familiar rasping bang. The torchlight receded, and soon Gord was in total blackness again. He picked up the piece of bread for safekeeping, sat back, and as per his routine, allowed his system to begin digesting the food he had eaten. Soon he would begin his silent exercises, and then came the game of bread and rats. Sometimes the rats won and carried off their feast, but usually an incautious rodent provided Gord with the protein he needed to stay alive and reasonably healthy in this dungeon. How he had come to be in this place was something Gord could scarcely believe and understand, no matter how many times he turned it over in his mind. Break. All right, so a big change of circumstance here. And Gord is thrown into the dungeon. And we see that it's a better place than back in that workhouse or living in the slums, as he seems to get a little more food. And now Gord, being a big enough character here and an adult, is able to supplement himself with the rats instead of being frightened away by them. It does speak to Gord's character that he has gone through enough in his life that this isn't like really throwing him off. It goes well with the storyline here that this is a nice surprising twist in the story. So, you know, here we do have, you know, the story does have, a few unexpected twists and turns, and this is definitely one of them right here.
Yeah, so that's his reward for saving Eva Lee.
And I think that we can kind of see from the context of Eva Lee's actions, and then if we think about the story, that Gord really is just, he's not only a commoner, but he's a thief. And no matter what, Eva Lee, here she was worth 10,000 gold ransom, which was never paid, or else gold and an alliance with the Plar of Rookroost. And here Gord comes back, although he's rescuing her, thinking that he's going to present himself as a, a rather poor, because he doesn't have much gold on him, thief that is going to take the hand of Lady Eva Lee. That, again, talks to Gord's bit of naivete and his usual run of luck with women.
Yep, all of his relationships have kind of turned out bad for him.
They have. Now, we can also look at this, going back to where he's thrown into the workhouse, so that, the first phase of the story is from him as the young, this young orphan, slum, untrained, slum liver, and then thrown into the workhouse. And from there, his fortunes changed for the better. And now we have Gord, as they said earlier, that this is like a second stage here. And here Gord is back again in a jail cell. And we're just past halfway. Well, we're reasonably past halfway in the story here. That to me, really, it's striking that Gord, there are a lot of themes, and a lot, the Gord's naivete, his boss daily reminded me of Theobald, and in kind of a backwards fashion, he now goes from being a rewarded member of boss daily's, community in Stoink, and now he's progressed backwards to where he's in a jail cell again.
Yeah, he risks his life for love and winds up in prison.
And that is, it's the general theme of, it's the general theme of adventure here. As Gord isn't going to live happily ever after, he really is meant to be living a life of adventure, which can be, adventure can be terrible things as well as good. And so, if you're running a campaign, it is something to think about, that you could have. One thing I did, I ran a Greyhawk campaign that used one of the characters from the Gord novels as, well, no, he was actually a character from the Wormy 8-Ball cartoon by Trampier, and the wizard had employed the characters to go out and get these magical items, and the only thing was what they didn't know is they were actually stealing the magical items. So they would go out of the city of Greyhawk on these adventures, come back working for the wizard, and then at the last, when the wizard was getting caught up by all the people coming for after him for stealing these items, it turns out he basically sets up the characters take the fall for him, and he disappears. And so these turnabouts can be a really interesting part of an adventure, to where the characters come back, triumphant from some adventure, and then all of a sudden they could have their coin seized, they could be thrown in jail, have to fight their way out of a castle or out of a city. So the unexpected should be part of the adventure here. So I did enjoy that, and I do think it is a good move to keep the story interesting, but a sad result for Gord as a character. All right, I'm going to restart right here. It is page number 217, paragraph 3. When they had arrived in the outer bailey of Blemu Castle, Evely had been whisked off by the Seneschal, with a covey of twittering ladies-in-waiting and maids fluttering after. Gord was taken to a small waiting room of some sort, while grooms led their sweating horses to the stable-yard for care and stalling. A servant brought him a flagon of wine and some tidbits for his refreshment during his wait, and Gord settled back and thought about the speech he would give before Count Blamu when the time came for his audience. After a dozen such mental rehearsals, however, Gord began to wonder what was going on. It could have taken an hour for Evely to ready herself to greet her father, and another hour to relate to him the events of her kidnapping, imprisonment, and rescue. But now the purple of twilight was showing through the arrow slit that pierced the wall of the antechamber, in which he was cooling his heels, and 2 hours had dragged into more than twice that length. Just as Gord was getting up to venture forth, to see if he had somehow been forgotten in the excitement of Evely's return, the door to the room flew open, and armed soldiers filled the opening. An officer of the guard called him forth by name, stating that Gord was to come with him and receive his reward for his part in Lady Evely's rescue. Gord was somewhat surprised at the stern and official manner of these men-at-arms, but then he knew nothing of nobility and their ways, save what little he had learned through Evely, so he shrugged to himself and complied without question. The officer and his 6 soldiers took him to yet another room, somewhere in the interior of the great castle, and there he was ordered to divest himself of weapons. When Gord hesitated, sword points were pressed against him from behind, and the officer laughed at the consternation Gord evidenced. That you are a base-born thief and masterless villain, our lord knows well. We were warned that you are dangerous with sword and dag, fellow, so this ploy was simply to disarm you without harm to any of his noble grace's loyal guardsmen. Gord couldn't believe his ears. He tried to convince himself that this was not actually happening to him, but was merely another of the fretful dreams that had plagued him of late. "You're going to be in trouble, my good man, when this stupid error is set right," he said. "I think you should speak with Lady Evely immediately, and save yourself and your fellows further embarrassment. Her ladyship, knave, was with Count Blamu when he gave the order for your arrest," the officer sneered. This statement left Gord dumbfounded, and he allowed himself to be stripped of his weapons, searched, and taken down to the castle's depths without resistance or further ward. There the soldiers turned him over to the warden of the dungeon, and a jailer thrust him into the small cell he occupied now, manacling him to the back wall as further precaution before locking the iron-bound cell door. At first, Gord had expected Evely to appear and free him from this imprisonment. Surely, he told himself, this was a terrible mistake. But the days plodded past, one after another, slowly and heavily, without such intercession. Evely did in fact send a message to him after a few days, reassurance that she would soon do something to help him, passed on to Gord in a whisper by one of the servants who brought him his pitiful daily ration of food. There were a few more such meager reassurances during the following days, and Gord benefited from extra scraps of food sent by the girl to comfort and nourish her confined rescuer and former lover, but nothing else was forthcoming. After a month or so, even these deliveries stopped, and Gord stopped keeping careful track of days. In the early stages of his imprisonment, he had allowed himself to languish in depression, not even thinking about trying to escape, though he possessed the means to do so. He simply sat, wasting away mentally and physically in the damp and darkness of the dungeon cell, waiting gloomily for Evely to make good on her promise to help him. Then, when he realized that the messages from Evely had stopped, Gord's mood changed abruptly. He resolved to find a way to revenge himself on both Count Blamu and his daughter for this cruel ingratitude. The guards had searched him thoroughly, but had not thought to make him change his clothes, and it was virtually impossible for a guard to find all of the small tools a thief could conceal about his person. Gord reached inside his boot, pulled forth a length of wire, and quickly had the lock of the leg iron open. Being free of the shackle gave Gord the freedom he needed to commence a regime of exercise. This he did, always replacing it around his ankle afterward, so that no one would suspect what he was up to. It was impossible for him, however, to open the cell door immediately, for the portal was secured on the outside by a heavy iron bar that dropped down in its locked position and prevented any prisoner from working it back. To move it, the flat bar had to be first lifted from outside and then drawn back, or so the theory went. All right, well, here we have, you know, not just a change of circumstances, but really betrayal by Everly. Whether she had a choice or not, I mean, you know, she gets him a few messages and nothing more, and maybe a little scraps of food. Now, Gord, you know, showing his youth there, falls into a depression. And only until he realizes that Everly is not going to do anything does he start, you know, taking positive action, which he could have done from the beginning. So Gord waits all that time to, you know, unlock the leg irons and start getting himself exercise and in better health for some kind of escape. Now, as far as the campaign goes, you know, we have the gratitude of kings and, you know, barons and stuff right here is, you know, notably not always a positive thing. But what we have a specific description of how in Blamu Castle, how the dungeons are set up. Maybe this isn't the worst cell in the dungeons. It's certainly better than the workhouse back in the City of Greyhawk. But, you know, we do have a little concrete example that you can use in your campaign of how the door is barred, how they shackle the prisoner inside the cell, you know, how they disarmed Gord. So there is a little campaign information here, but not much lore, just some specifics that about the dungeon and about, you know, how they treat things, not really too much about the Greyhawk campaign itself. All right, I'm going to restart here. It is page number 219, paragraph 5. When not building his muscles and practicing his acrobatics and similar skills, Gord worked patiently at the wooden door, slowly scratching out an elongated rectangle with the wire he used to pick the manacle's simple lock. Eventually, he worked a piece of wood out in a long, thick splinter, giving him access to the second layer of wood beneath. He kept working at flaking away the wood behind the piece he had loosened, using dirt and spit to glue the splinter back in place each day before his food came. It would take a long time, but eventually he would have a hole through the door, a passage large enough to enable manipulation of the bolt. The cell door was 3 inches thick, but its own substance, the chunk he had worked free, would provide him the tool he needed to lift the bar, and the stiff wire would then push back the metal bolt. Gord would eventually be free of the cell. This he was sure. Had Everly pleaded with her father to spare Gord, recalling how they felt about each other, Gord could not help but think that she had. It was certainly Count Blemo's knowledge of their intimacy that had caused him to react as he did. Why Everly had told her father about this, or under what circumstances, he could not imagine. That she had told her father too much about Gord was certain, and for this Gord blamed himself. He should not have spoken so freely to Evelie about his past, and he should have carefully coached her on what to tell her father about the rescue and journey. Thoughts such as these, giving Evelie the benefit of the doubt, made Gord feel good about himself and provided him some comfort, but did not lessen his desires for evening the score. What became of her promise of undying love, her pledge of reward for her safe return to her home? And certainly the gratitude of Count Blumeau was another score to be settled with interest. Gord came to grips in a fashion with the realization that there had never been real hope for him and Evelie, although he still thought that some elevation of his station, followed by a test of some sort, should have been allowed him. Success in this test should have been the measure of his actual worth, rather than judging him by artificial standards based on the perceived value of inherited rank that was so prized by these aristocrats. Well, Gord intended to show them the merit of his low-born station. I remember that Gord had similar daydreams back when he was in the Beggars Union. I'm not remembering exactly what they were, but young Gord there did have daydreams about rewards that were, you know, quite ridiculous. He had that vision, actually. Let me think now. It was back when he first left the slums, and he was going to steal enough from the foreign quarter so that he could go back and have Snaggle assassinated, and he dreamed about having making riches from his thieving ability back when he was 12-year-old orphan Gord. And here again, we have a very similar thing with Gord, you know, dreaming about what rewards he should have gotten. And then the other thing is just the comment about how he plans to escape. I'm a little not really seeing the ability to dig through the door with the stiff wire. You know, that just seems, I mean, he has nothing else to do except exercise. So, you know, maybe he can cut his way through 3 inches of wooden door with the wire. It seems like he should have had something, you know, a little better secreted on him that would have allowed him, you know, that seems like it wouldn't have been such a monumental bit of work to cut through a, you know, wooden jailhouse door with wire.
Right now I'm envisioning Shawshank Redemption, where that guy cuts through the wall behind the poster to escape the prison.
Yes, with a little rock hammer that he wears down.
Yeah, it took him a long time, but he did it.
Yes, and I can see it's possible. I mean, you know, if you keep working, the metal of a stiff wire is certainly better than the kind of wood that's likely to be there. And, you know, he does say that it's wood where on the first layer inside he's able to get a large splinter of wood come loose, which he intends to use to help his escape. It just seems like, you know, it's possible, but it seems unlikely. But that is good warning, though, for players to think about secreting some items on their person just in case of emergency.
Right.
Just a small...
Did you ever think about what Blumeau is an anagram of?
No, what is it?
I don't know, but I was sitting here thinking, and it looks like it could anagram the bloom.
Well, that is true. It could be the blooms.
Yeah, and Count Blumeau is kind of a jerk, so I was chuckled when I saw that. I was like, wow.
That is true. Well, I'll have to bring that up in, you know, on the Discord there to see if somebody's noted it before. Because I had never thought about before that could be the Blooms, and what an ass he is. You know, that is funny.
Yeah, I was looking at it while you were reading it. I was like, the word struck me, and I was like, I wonder if that goes, because I know he's done that. Gary has done that with a lot of the characters. And they represent real people, and like Pomarge is his first wife, I think, and there's a number of things.
Yeah, it's kind of like there was module B3, and it wasn't Gygax who did it, but somebody, especially the illustrator, put the heads of the faces of Gygax and other members of staff as various monsters in module B3.
Excellent.
And it's why it was, you know, recalled. You know, they actually published it, and then they took all the copies that they hadn't sent out, which were most of them, and threw them in a dump, you know, and several people, you know, grabbed some copies. I know I got 4 copies that Lauren Schick had owned, but somebody got a whole case of them that were shrink-wrapped, you know, so... Yeah, there's always been this thing within, you know, Gygax and company there, always using, you know, anagrams of names or similar names. And that to me is very amusing there. So, you know, I mean, here are various things that I never noted before. I'm going to bring up that Fossil Farm on Cannon Fire website, because there is a place... for Anna's maps to comment on, you know, data that may be a little erroneous. And, you know, people may disagree about, like, Owlthorpe and Fossil Farm. It's just, like, Fossil Farm, the only note that I have of it, which I may have missed, is from here, Saga of Old City. And looking at the map, it definitely is not in the right location.
Regardless whether or not people disagree, there's anomalies, and you know, you just ask for clarification or something.
And if there are no other references, then definitely that is not where Fossil Farm is, according to the one reference that I see.
It should be somewhere between what is it, Nivlik and Nurl.
Yeah, I actually it should be, but it should also be on the eastern side of the Harp River there, because first they cross the ford, and then they travel from Fossil Ford going left, which would be east. So it should be like, there should be some kind of either a twist in that road, you know, above north of Nurl, and that leads over to Nurl itself, and rather on the Nivlik side of the river there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to restart here. It is page number 220, and it is the third paragraph from the end. More of the long days passed, and Gord finally completed the preparations necessary for his escape. The hole in the door was nearly through to the other side. Between periods of scratching away on the door, Gord had also worked patiently with the wire to pry loose the metal hasp that fastened his leg chain to the stone wall. Now all was in readiness, and he would put his plan into action immediately. Many more days of this confinement would certainly drive him crazy, despite the routine of exercise and work to which he had dedicated himself. I wanted to mention something here that suddenly occurred to me. I'm not sure if I'm right, but in the Roger Zelazny Amber series, there is a point where Corwin is thrown into prison. And I'm not sure, maybe I have the two mistaken, but I thought he was working on the door in a similar way as Gord is right here, where he's trying to carve his way through the door, around the lock in the door. I'm not entirely sure, but I seem to remember that. I'll have to go back later and check to see if that's mentioned in, it's the first Amber series, where Corwin is, I believe, blinded and put into prison by his brother. All right. And then I'll need to look at the date to see when, you know, when that was written, which I believe is before this book, but I'll have to check. All right. I'm going to restart here. It's page number 220, and it is the second to last paragraph. On the eve of his escape attempt, he forced himself to rest for a long time, desiring to be as alert as he could be when the time came. His fitful slumber was interrupted by the arrival of his daily meal, which he knew from experience was the only time anyone would visit him until the following day. And by then he expected to be long gone. He ate every last bit of the food, drank the water, and went to work. First the chain was freed from the wall. The hasp he tucked away in his filthy rags of clothing, for it might be useful for something later. The chain and manacle would be his only weapon, but a deadly one, for the heavy cuff on the end of the long series of iron links would act much as any flail head. For the last time he pried up the splinter of wood that concealed the hole he had created, and the final portion of his escape work commenced. Soon this vile cell would hold him captive no longer. Gord wished fervently that he had been able to make the opening in the door larger, for the iron staple from the wall would have broken through the remaining quarter inch or so of wood with rapid ease, but he had dared not to make a hole that large, for fear of the place being spotted by his jailers. Breaking through this last thin barrier would take an hour or more to achieve with the wire, but what had to be was. Ford bent to the task with diligence and high spirits, rubbing the wire's point back and forth, up and down, slowly scoring the perimeter of the opening, so that eventually he would simply have to push, and the plug would pop out against the bolt. Then the splinter used as a lever would press the bar down, and the wire would work the bar back from its fast position. Occasionally he had to stop the cutting motion and resharpen the wire tip on the stone next to him, but he didn't mind. Perhaps the lord of this place had wished to execute him, Gord speculated as he worked. That was possible, considering his long incarceration. What purpose would the count have had for keeping him here for this much time? Probably, then, Evelie did assist him, persuading her father to spare Gord an immediate death, in favor of a slow one, rotting for years in this dungeon. Gord nodded to himself. Father and daughter both were responsible for this wretched situation, although the former far more than the latter. Gord felt a pang still when he thought of Evelie's breathtaking loveliness, and their love for each other, or more accurately, his love, and whatever passed for that emotion in her. Oh, he was being bitter. He had been in love with her, and she had loved him too. Gord could not force himself to hate her. He reserved that emotion for his noble Grace Dunstan, Count of Blamue, Lord of Nurl. The strength of that hate acted upon his muscles, and without realizing it, Gord pressed harder as he scored through the tough oaken fibers. The force cracked the last bit of wood free on one side, and the sudden giving way surprised the young man. Damn, he muttered to himself, almost losing his grip on the wire. He pushed against the loose piece with the tip of the wire, and a small piece of wood broke free and dropped away. The tiny sound of the sliver hitting the flagstone outside his cell brought him joy. He worked feverishly to splinter away the remainder of the plug. Dim light filtered through the opening, showing the iron bolt that held the door shut. "Now I've got you, you bastard," he exclaimed under his breath. "Come on now, darling, you can do it. Freedom was just inches away. The splinter from the door and the wire soon did their duty. It was difficult to manipulate both through the small hole, but Gord was dexterous and nimble of finger, as suited one of his profession. The bolt moved away little by little, and when it passed from his view off to the side of the hole, Gord brought the wire back inside and carefully bent the end of it at a right angle. Using the splinter for added leverage, he pushed sideways to force the tip of the wire against the end of the bar. Then the bolt moved another inch or so, and Gord knew he had succeeded. Being careful to remain calm despite his exhilaration, he took time to stand up and spend a couple of minutes stretching and flexing to loosen his strained and tense muscles. Then he pushed gently on the door. It groaned on its hinges and swung outward an inch or so. Wyatt, he hissed to the protesting metal, "Do you wish to warn those dirty buggers before I have a chance for revenge?" But he knew the noise of the hinges could not be helped. Gord shoved the heavy portal open a full foot, quickly, and slid between it and the jamb with equal haste. After looking left and right, peering with squinting eyes into a dimly illuminated passage that seemed to his aching pupils to radiate brightness, Gord ventured forth. No guard had heard the noise. No jailer was hastening to investigate. He closed the cell door, shot the bar silently, and scuffed the bits of wood into the shadows. No sense in alerting any passerby to his absence. The right path seemed to lead off to other portions of this subterranean complex, but the route to the left meant freedom. This was the direction he'd heard his jailers come from, and in the light given off by a torch in a holder far down the corridor, he could see a door that he hoped would lead to a stairway. Chain held at the ready, Gord crept with uttermost stealth toward the light. As he neared the end of the passage, he heard voices coming from behind the partly open door of the chamber, off to the side. This, he supposed, was a place in which the dungeon warden and possibly a jailer kept their post. They only did their duty, the escaping thief thought to himself, but that meant nothing to him. Gord thought their jobs lowly and disgusting, and if he could, he would slay both without qualm or hint of mercy. By this time, Gord could see very well in the brownish illumination. And before him were the men who stood between him and escape to the world above. He might be able to slip past the chamber and get to the other doorway, only a few paces farther away, without being noticed by them. But with their garments and weapons, he would have a better chance to slip out of the castle, unless he could find the Count quickly and settle that matter first. Otherwise, Gord would make for Nurl, gather resources, and work out a sure plan. Break. First thing I thought was that that Nurl and the castle were in the same place. So I'm not sure if it's just that the castle is just outside of Nurl, but I really thought he was in Bramu's castle right now. So maybe he just considers Blemu Castle and Nurl as two separate things? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's quite possible. I thought he was in Nurl too.
Yeah, I thought he was in Blemu Castle as well, and that this was, the dungeons were directly below the castle, you know, where he was led down and everything. So, you know, I'm not quite sure at this. Yes, this breakout, but we've already, you know, like the breakout is kind of like Shawshank to Redemption, or, you know, a little bit from Hogan's Heroes here, because it is a bit of an odd breakout to cut through that door. You know, it may be that there's more secure parts of the dungeon, and that this isn't, because it didn't sound You know, it sounded disgusting, but at the same time, I don't think it sounded quite as bad as like he was describing the workhouse.
No, he was alone here at least.
Yes, because imagine if he were in with other, like, you know, he'd have to work with other people to get out. And, you know, so he wasn't in the worst, worst of places, and they were feeding him something. I mean, bread and soup made of peels it's not the worst thing in the world. It, you know, it does, Gygax does bring up a good point that, you know, the lack of protein that you're not going to get from bread or vegetable soup is going to really weaken you. Yeah. So, you know, he could eat, they could have had him eating the bugs. He could have gotten protein from there as well. You know, there's this idea kind of like what they did with Count of Monte Cristo. Not Count of Monte Cristo. Yeah, Count of Monte Cristo, where they had him jailed, but he, you know, he broke out there by pretending to be his companion who died, and replaced himself or put himself in with that body. But, you know, anyway, it is, you know, it is interesting here to see the method that's used. All right, and like I said, I'm a little confused now about where the location is. It's just a, you know, he's throwing out a little bit here that, you know, I'm not quite sure of what he means about making his way toward Nurl. And he's saying, slip out of the castle and make the way toward Nurl. All right, I'm going to restart right here. We have a little time left, and I'm going to begin on page 200, continue here on page 223, the third paragraph from the end. Enough thought. It was time for action. Rein ready at his side, he crept up to the doorway leading into the small room where warden and jailer were sitting and talking idly. By peering slightly around the edge of the portal, he could see the warden in a chair no more than 3 feet from the door, facing toward the interior of the room. He had them by surprise and would kill them now. Gord raised the chain over his head. Just as he was about to leap into the place and smash his makeshift weapon upon the unsuspecting head of the warden, the door leading to the castle above was flung open, and four men ran through. "Stop on your life," one shouted as he saw what was about to transpire. The first soldier through the door was upon Gord an instant later and used his halberd to intercept the chain. Gord was caught, and he knew it. He turned to stare defiance at these men who had thwarted his escape. He looked full into both of Geller's laughing eyes. All right, I'm going to break here, as it is the end of chapter 21 on page 223 right here, and we are just within minutes of the end of, you know, the program for the recording for tonight. And I'll be looking. Now, here we have quite the surprise. It caught me by surprise. I was not expecting the appearance of Geller at this point. And here we have Geller in, you know, a group with him. Sounds like he's here to rescue Gord, but we'll see. It's been a while since I've actually read this book. I've read it probably about seven or more times. You know, I've indexed it once, and I've certainly read it years ago for entertainment. I think the story is much better than I had last remembered it. I think I was much more critical of the story itself. The lore about the Greyhawk campaign is as compelling and inspirational to me as ever. But the story itself I'm finding much more enjoyable. And I really liked this twist that has happened with Gord being thrown into the dungeon of Dunstan, Lord of Nurl, Count Blamu. All right. It is just about seven, so I'm going to summon up Craig here. And I'm going to end it for the night. And it's going to be, you know, it'll end up everything. The other 27 recordings are now archived. So if you want to go back and listen to the story or listen to sections of the story, you can find it linked from the homepage, Jay-Z Reads the Gourd Books, of the Cannon Fire website, and I hope you do. And we're going to be putting later more information about which recordings are which, so that you know you can pick out sections you want to listen to, rather than listen to everything, because we're at this was hour 28 we just finished up. All right, well, thank you for being here and listening, and feel free to comment or write in the Greyhawk Fiction channel where we have text questions. And I'm going to say good night. And this ended on page 224 for this recording. Good night.